Very important. I know we say this all the time, but listen to what it says. Understanding his like, what he likes and what he don't like. And we're followers of him. We should like the same things he likes and dislike the same thing he dislikes. It's simple stuff. So today's Torah portion is 47, and it's Re'eh. It's Hebrew for see. For see. Remember that. It's for see. What does he want us to see? He wants us to see the one who is leading us. Get your eyes fixed on the one who's leading you. And who's leading us? Or who should be leading us, I should say. Yeshua. So we got to get our eyes on him. We got to fix our eyes on him. And we got to do what he did, say what he said, and live like he lived. The Torah is Deuteronomy chapter 11, starts with verse 26 through 16, verse 17. And the half Torah is Isaiah 54, 11 through 55:5. There's a lot of stuff happened. Let me just bring some encouragement to you. We can't emphasize enough how important it is to not wait till Friday and Saturday morning for you to get the Torah. This is not what we're doing it for. We're not doing it so you get the Torah. You got to do this all week long because it's impossible for us to teach the whole entire Torah in the two settings. I mean, we would have to really shorthand it to do that, and that I don't think it gives it enough. So you got to at least read the text and spend a little bit of time just relaxing in it and get what it gives you. And in the half Torah also, by Bible study, it's important that you look at that because you're getting a chance to see how during the captivity they still had something because the Torah was illegal. It wasn't allowed. They still had something they could read. Plus, it brings to life the prophecies. So a lot of times we read Isaiah, we don't understand these prophecies. We don't understand what they're about. When you read it during this time for the half Torah, and you read it when you're doing it in conjunction with the Torah, you can see what it means. You can see the meaning behind it and see what these prophecies are about and read it in its context. Very important to do. So the topics in the portion, this week's Torah portion, is C, says Moses to the people of Israel, I place before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing that will come when they fulfill Elohim's commands, and the curse if they abandon them. So this is cause and effect. So cause and effect works in our lives every day. Cause and effect works. Either we're walking the day out with the blessing pursuing us, following us. It's not one day I'm going to get a break and it'll all happen for me. The blessings are going to come when you start living this out. They just start doing it. You don't even know how it happens. People start doing things and doing things that's beyond your expectation. Then you can tell that the blessings are following you. You're experiencing the cause and effect that come with obeying. And the curses also, if there's something constantly going wrong, constantly, I would check what I'm doing when it comes to the Torah and it's and being fulfilled in our life. So the curse, if we abandon them, this should be proclaimed on Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal before the people cross over into the Holy Land. So that's, we're basically not going to get out this first part, but there's a lot of parts to it. But we'll stay, we're going to stay in it. The part we're going to go over, we're going to do it extensively. We're going to look at it extensively. The parts we do, we want to make sure we cover in every part of it. The next thing, a temple should be established in the place that Elohim will choose to dwell his name there, where the people should bring their sacrifice to him. It is forbidden to make offerings to Elohim in any other place. It is permitted to slaughter animals elsewhere, not as the sacrifice, but to eat their meat. The blood which is in the temple is poured upon the altar, however, not to be eaten. And a false prophet or one who entices others to worship idols should be put to death. An idolatrous city must be destroyed. The identifying sign for kosher animals and fish and the list of non-kosher birds first given in Leviticus 11 are repeated. And again, we see that in Devarim, because what is Devarim? A summation of all the other books that we went through. That's why Yeshua quoted it more than any book in the Bible, because it's easy to reference something that sums up than to go back and point it out to its original text. And the next thing, a tenth of all produce is to be eaten in Jerusalem or else exchanged for money with which food is purchased and eaten there. In certain years, this tithe is given to the poor instead. Firstborn cattle and sheep are to be offered in the temple and their meat eaten by the Kohanim or the priests. And then next thing, the mitzvah of charity obligation, a Jew to aid a needy fellow with a gift or loan on a sabbatical year occurring every seventh year. All loans are to be forgiven. All indentured servants are to be set free after 6 years of service. And lastly, the Parsha concludes with the laws of the three pilgrimage festivals, Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot, when all should go to see and be seen before Elohim in the Holy Temple. So before I get started real heavy into this Torah portion, I want to point out something to you. I want you to listen to this very carefully. This was part of a devotional reading that I did today. And it ministered to me so much, I had to put it in here. So it's not an actual part of this Torah teaching, but it is a part of it when you hear what I'm going to say. This is stuff I thought about all week, and I come across this little article, which is kind of a long article, but I did it as a devotional read today, and it really ministered to my heart. In Jeremiah 31:31, "See, the days are coming, declares Jehovah, when I shall make a renewed covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Yehuda. Not like the covenant I made with their fathers in the day when I strengthened their hand to bring them out of the land of Mitzrayim, my covenant which they broke, though I was a husband to them, declares Jehovah." Now he's telling us right up front, they broke it, but I was a true husband. When he used that word, he's telling you, I was faithful to my vow. Everything I said I would do, everything that I promised them I would do, still is real to me, the day they broke it, as the day I promised it. That's what he's telling us. "For this is the covenant I shall make with the house of Israel after those days, declares Jehovah. I shall put my Torah in their inward parts and write it on their hearts, and I shall be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And no longer shall they teach each one his neighbor and each one his brother, saying, Know Jehovah. For they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, declares Jehovah. For I shall forgive their crookedness and remember their sins no more." What a powerful statement that he makes. Now this is the prophet Jeremiah prophesying this. Then we see in Hebrews chapter 8, and think about this, the title, just the title of this book, Hebrews. Who do you think he's writing it to? If it's titled Hebrews, who do you think this is being written to? Now, what he's got in mind when he's writing it to the Hebrews, though, what has he got in mind? We got Yeshua comes, he dies, he's buried, he rises again, he paid the price in full. And now we're being grafted in. All believers in Yeshua are what? Grafted in. We're not of the natural, but we're grafted in. So whether you're of the natural or not, you still get what happens. You're grafted in. So this word is given to the Hebrews. What happens when you get grafted in? You become what? You're a Hebrew. Think about that. Now, we give titles. We got fancy titles. You know what? We want to give to who we are, what we represent. So most of the time, people use their organizational name, They'll say, well, I'm this, I'm that. You know, that's what we do. We have these titles. But we can't self-title. If we're born-again believers in Yeshua, who paid the price in full, then we have to be what he said we would be. And what he says we're going to be is what? Hebrews. Now, we know that he comes in our Wednesday night Bible study, and he says, I come, and there was nobody to receive me. Where is everybody? Because they had been dispersed. They were all over. But think about it. He's bringing back his people. And that's why Yeshua said, I come for the lost house of Israel. The lost house of Israel, what would those people be? They would be what? Hebrews. Let's not kid ourselves. This is not stuff that's hidden. This is not a mystery. This has been on the pages all our lives. But we were blinded to it. He didn't open our eyes to it until the time come. Even if somebody might have said it, our ears were deaf to it. We didn't want to hear it. How many of you know we got a lot of people, their eyes are still closed and their ears are still deaf, and they don't want to hear it? And it's not because it's not true. They don't want to hear it because they don't want to say they were wrong and give up what they believe in, and it's nothing but traditions of men. So I want you to think about what this reading, when I read this and see what it says. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 7. And I just, for sake of not reading the whole chapter, I started with verse 7. For if that the first covenant had been faultless, then no place would have been sought for a second. Now this is the verse they use. Why would you go back to a faultless covenant? You're not going back to a faultless covenant. The reason it was faultless is because, and he just told us why it was faultless. Because you had transgressed the covenant, but I was a husband to you. That's why it was faultless. You committed adultery, I didn't. That's why it was faultless. And once that happened, it was no benefit to them until they have a redeemer come and redeem back. Now watch this. For finding fault with them, not it. Very important words. Words are very important. He didn't find fault with it. But yeah, we use that as an opening statement to say we can't go back to what's fault, has a faulty, it's faulty. The Torah's not faulty. People are faulty. It's not it, it's them. How many know we're part of them? And this is something you can clearly see if you take some time to look at it. For finding fault with them, he said, see, the days are coming, says Jehovah, when I shall conclude with the house of Israel and with the house of Yehuda a renewed covenant. What is he going to, now he's about to quote something. What is he going to quote? Jeremiah 31. Because it was already prophesied. Not according to the covenant I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand and led them out of the land of Mizraim, because they did not continue in my covenant. They, again, when I use the word they, I'm talking about the Torah, or I'm talking about people? I'm talking about people. They didn't do what? They didn't continue in it. So that's why the faultiness was, you was told what to do, you didn't do what it said to do, so now there's a fault in it. And now you're forever banished from me. You're banished. But hey, I got something for you. I'm gonna send a ransom. It's gonna be paid. Yeshua's gonna come and pay the price to get you back. So there's a price being paid for us to come back. And we're not gonna come back to something different. Remember in the Bible study? He said the first tablets were sapphire. There was like a jewel, it was like me giving you a diamond ring. But you broke those. The picture's beautiful. You broke those, but he said, you out some more sapphire stones, and I'm going to write the words that was on the first stone on the second set. He didn't change a thing. He said, the same words that was on the first set, I'm going to write it on the second set. And so when I was just going over all this stuff, it's like this stuff is it's so good. You know, it's hard to describe the feeling you get when you're seeking the truth and you want to know the truth and you just want it raw. You don't have to code it. Just give it to me raw, Lord. And I've been praying to the Lord. I said, Lord, you said you would write this on my heart. And that's what I want you to do. And whatever I got to do to make it change, I'm going to have to make that change. You're going to put it in my mind? That's what I'm going to do. He said, not according to the covenant I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand and led them out of the land of Mizraim, because they did not continue in my covenant, and I disregarded them, says Jehovah. Because this is the covenant that I shall make with the house of Israel after those days, says Jehovah. Giving my law in their mind. Everybody say mind. Keep that in mind now. You might want to write that down. Put mind on a piece of paper. Mind. And I shall write them on their hearts. Everybody write heart. Say heart. Write heart down. Mind and heart. And I shall be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. Now, how does he become our Elohim? After it's been written on our mind and in our heart. And that we'll be his people. Now, if we Jehovah's people, how do you lose at anything? Even in our Torah, in our half Torah, he said it's going to appear like you're going to lose. Like it's all done, but when I show up, he's going to come. And it's going to be amazing what he does when he comes. And they shall by no means teach one his neighbor and each one his brother, saying, know Jehovah, because they all shall know me from the least of them to the greatest of them. Now that least and greatest is something that bothers people for a lot of time, but it shouldn't bother you today. And we can't, don't tell me, well, I don't have the education. You might be in the least group, but he covered you there. And you might have more education than you're willing to bow down and learn this simple stuff. And he covered you there. He's letting us know when he puts it in us, it's not going to be because we get it because we're learned. He's going to put it in us because of what Yeshua pays for at Calvary. He cleans us up. And when he cleans us up, he can move in. And until we get cleaned by the blood of Yeshua, he can't move in. And the more we study the Torah, the better we'll get. It's just that, it's a simple fact. So he's telling us this from the least to the greatest of them. So that covers everybody. There's nobody left out here. Because I shall forgive their unrighteousness. He's going to tell us why he's going to do it. I'll forgive their what? Unrighteousness. The Torah teaches us about righteousness. And it tells us what's unrighteous. And we got to choose. So we come to the path, and there's two paths we come to. There's a path that's righteous and a path that's unrighteous. There's Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. He said you're going to choose one of them, but I just want you to know, on Mount Gerizim, that's where the blessings are. On Mount Ebal, the curse is there. You choose whatever one you want. You're in the valley, and you got to choose. What's the valley? The valley of decision. And it's multitudes and multitudes in the valley of decision. Deciding. And the thing about it is, we think that that statement is a statement of the lost and the saved. That statement is not for the lost and saved. This statement was made to the house of Israel. We're talking about God's people, this statement's made for. And so we're talking about church people in the valley of decision. They can't make their minds up if they want to continue in the Torah or not. Standing in the valley of decision, you can't just stand there and say, well, I'm going to wait a year or two. It won't wait on you. And God's not going to be disrespected in that level, at that level. That dangerous territory to be in. He says, I set before you life and death. It's all over the Torah. We see it all over, life and death. And he tells you, hey, choose life. Choose life. And it's constant telling us, choose life. That's what the Torah does all the time. Choose life. And it's constantly pointing us in that direction because our tendency as a human being is always to go this way because it's so lit up, it's so bright, it satisfies self. It makes sure self is right. Because I shall forgive their unrighteousness and their sins and their lawlessnesses. And I shall no longer remember. Now, this is a statement in that article. I don't even know who wrote the article. But this is a statement in the article. And this touched my life in a big way all week. After we got back from Indiana, You know, I was just going over the Torah, just reading over it, and even driving back, we played, you got a lot of windshield time going 17, 18 hours. So I played through it. We done went through everything. We couldn't listen to nothing else for this particular week, so we covered it pretty good. But I was thought, there's got to be something to put this thing together. And that's what that's one of the things that I'm constantly aware of. Lord, what else is there? And this statement right here, if God puts Torah in your mind, it will consume your thoughts. How many ready for this? Because what gets us in trouble is when our thoughts are running wild, back and forth. One day my thoughts is on Mount Gerizim. One day my thoughts is on Mount Ebal. Gerizim's structured. Gerizim is where the fruit is. Gerizim is where you're gonna bear fruit unto good works. But on Ebal, you bear no fruit. It's a desert place. Nothing grows there. It looks pretty. It's all clean and everything. And and that's why you got to come in and you got to light it up. Man's got to light it up and make it nice. But at the end of it, there's nothing good there. If God puts the Torah in your mind, it will consume your thoughts. If God writes Torah on your heart, it will consume your passions. I can tell you this. There's a warning. I'm going to give this warning. The more you get into the Torah, the more you're going to want it. It consumes your passion. Now, you will get passionate about stuff. We'll get passionate about different things we like, and God's not, he's not against us being passionate about things. But if we show more passion for other things than we show for him, he's got a real problem with that. And the fact is, the only reason we show more passion for something else is because we have no passion for the Torah. And he says, what he's going to do? I'm going to put it on your, what's the two words you wrote down? He's going to put it in your mind. What it's going to do when he puts it in your mind? What does it do? It consumes your thoughts. You don't have time to think in a negative because the Torah won't allow you. It sets parameters. That's what the Torah does. When you read it, it sets parameters up. It puts a fence up. And it says, this is the path. So you're standing in the valley in Shechem. You're at Shechem. This is the first place that Abraham had went to when he first gave this covenant. Here we are at Shechem. And another name for it is Samaria, which is the more modern time. And I often wonder, these are the thoughts that I had this week. I often wondered how Yeshua is walking with his disciples. And all of a sudden he says, you know what? I must need go through Samaria. I often wondered about that because he's the living Torah. And he's got to teach us a lesson. There's a lesson we're going to learn by this. He said, I got to go through Samaria. What does it mean? Because that's the place of decision. You're going to make a decision there. You either go on to Gerizim or Mount Ebal. One of them. We're going there. And so I was thinking about that this week. And when I came across this today, it touched my life in such a way, I couldn't help it. I couldn't help but put it in here. So I was done with my slides and kind of been just doing other studies today. And I opened it back up and I put all this in. This I ain't even got to the Torah yet because I put all this in today. If Yeshua fills you full of the Torah, it will consume your entire being. Now, who's the Torah teacher? Now, he meets a woman at a well, right? He meets this woman, and she's been on Mount Ebal, and now she's at the well, and she's where? In the Valley of Decision. And she's talking about, and he starts talking about this water. He said, I'm going to give you some water, you'll never thirst again. And she'd like to have that water. He just preaches this simple message that she can understand. Now, she's got her past, and she's a mess. She's a mess. She has five of them, and the one she's with is not hers. Think about that. She's got her own set of problems. But Yeshua's there for a purpose. What's the purpose? He's showing us that as the master Torah teacher, he takes us through that, he takes us back to this Torah portion. You got to get your eyes on Yeshua. Fix your eyes on him. And one of the Torahs, it tells you, it says, when it comes to when the word rabbi was used, and it says, be so close to your rabbi that the dust that he kicks up lands on you. And that's, let me tell you, it's not your pastor that you got to be close to, because he's trying to get close to Yeshua. You got to get close to Yeshua. He's the only rabbi we got. There is no other rabbi. According to Scripture, there is no other rabbi. There's one rabbi, and that's Yeshua. And we better be so close to him that when he kicks dust up, it lands on us. And then he comes to the next toy. He says, see, fix your eyes on him. Lock eyes on him and don't get your eyes off of him. And when Yeshua did it that well, he finally got this woman's eyes to open. All she could see was that life. We don't know what her parents lived like, but more than likely it was handed down her family. She had that whole life. That's how it was. It was from one man to the next man to the next man. No stability. She'd probably been hurt. She'd probably been beat. Whatever was going on, she was in a mess. But Yeshua was there to give her a drink of living water and change her life forever. Where was he? He was in Samaria in the Valley of Decision on Shechem right there. And we're gazing at Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And he says, if you want to change, you can. You want to go down this path, this is the path of blessings right here. If you want to stay on that path, you keep going down there. It's not going to turn out good for you. So we got to get, Yeshua fills you full of the Torah. It will consume your entire being. So if you are really saved, you will read, study, and obey Torah, period. It's just a fact. The struggle is because we're not passionate. It's not been written in us yet. And it's not because God's not doing the writing. I read to you in the book of Hebrews that he says in the last day that he would write the Torah in your mind and put it in your heart. And what happens when he puts it in your mind? What does the Torah do? It consumes your thoughts. You think about it every single day. There's not a day that goes by that you don't think about the Torah. If that's not happening to you, then you better check some things. When he puts it in your heart, what happens? Your passions. Because when you're passionate about something, you hook your heart to it. You link to it. And you're connected to it. Now you're passionate about that. When people get passionate about it, and so what we try to do, because we're trying to fix people's passion, and we can't. We can't fix your passion with more music. We can't fix your passion with more lights. We can bring smoke in here. We can jump through hoops. We can do spiritual aerobics, whatever you want to do it. But you can't fix it. All we're going to do is excite you for a little while, and after the trick's over, your excitement leaves. But the Torah gets inside of you, and you got something that you can live on now for the rest of your life. That's the difference. How many want that? I know I want it. This is what I've been praying, Lord. Put it in my mind. When I come across something that's truth, it's gonna catch me. It's gonna be like a flashing light goes off. It's gonna be an alarm that goes off, and I never want to miss what I need to have. If I'm yielding to it, and I come across it, don't let me miss it. Help me to grab. I want to gravitate to it with everything that's in me. When I read this, when I was reading into the devotion, you know, I could have said, well, I done a tour, all my slides are made. I'm just gonna kick back and do something different. Why did I do that? Because there's never enough when a Torah gets you. It consumes your passion when he writes it in your heart. So this is what he's trying to do. Your whole life will be learning what the commandments are, learning how people in the Bible were blessed by keeping them, and learning avoid what happens to people in the Bible who did not obey them. And this is what this Torah portion is really about. It's telling us, don't do what they did, because you're going to get yourself in trouble. We have all these examples. And we have the master. So people say, so one of the things I said in the Bible study was, I said, you know, we're going to have to start learning how to witness about what we're doing. We can't give some short answer about what we're doing, you know, we're going back and following the Old Testament. That's really not the truth. Maybe I need to do a class on what do you do when somebody asks you, what are y'all doing? First thing I would do is find common ground with people. I would say, well, we're following Jesus. You got to use that because that's where people are. We're following Jesus where we are. We call him Yeshua. When you look at Hebrew Matthew, what does it call him? In Hebrew Matthew, what does it call him? It calls him Yeshua. And so now we have stuff coming out. We have Acts in Hebrew, Luke in Hebrew, parts of Luke, parts of John, and almost all the Revelations that's being discovered in Hebrew. He said in the last days, knowledge will increase. Now that could be on both sides. Evil knowledge could increase, and godly knowledge can increase. Who's running that race is going to be beside, because we're in the valley of decision. Multitudes, he said, multitudes. And there's people that are, they know what we're saying. There's people that are going and listening to these messages and not saying a word about it. They're hearing it. But once you hear it, you're on the hook for it. You got to decide what you're going to do. And I pray that they're here tonight, this one tonight, because this one's calling us out. It's definitely wanting us to do. So what you do, you start with common ground. We're following Yeshua, right? If we're following him, then we ought to be doing what he did. We ought to be saying what he said. We ought to be speaking like he spoke. Because that's what he did. And what did he speak? Did he speak something different? And if we're talking about the 10 words that were on the first article, that was destroyed. But he said, I'm going to take what I wrote on the first one and put it on the second one. He didn't say, I'm going to do something different. Because we're going to have this New Testament church, and they're going to be full of the Spirit and all of this stuff. And they're going to, people say, well, we're Spirit-led. We're Spirit-led. Let me tell you, a lot of people that are Spirit-led, the Spirit didn't lead them nowhere. It didn't lead them in the direction they were supposed to go in. Because when you already got a bias on what you want to believe, you'll go as far as that. And then when the Spirit keeps going, you say, see ya. You put your foot in the ground and you just get steeped knee deep in the traditions and you're not letting go. And you're holding on both sides. You say, well, I ain't letting go. This is how we always done it. And you won't let go. When the Spirit's saying, come on, come on. Be honest with yourself and say, Lord, I want what you want. I want to love what you want, hate what you hate. Show me your glory. We don't even know what that means. Well, let me tell you, I took it to heart when the Lord said, when you look into my glory, you'll be instantly changed. I took that to heart. I believed everything he told me. I believed it was his word that he spoke. And when I looked into it, I realized we weren't doing near what we were supposed to be doing. There was no glory. Also, it's the glory we give God. The glory we give God, he don't accept glory that's mixed. If you mixing it, he don't accept it. And I'm like, God, how are you accepting this stuff when this is nonsense what we're doing? Now, this is my journey by myself before I said a word here. Could you imagine being this guy? You feel like you're the only man on the planet, on the island, and you got all this information, and you don't even know what to do with it. And you can't deny it's a fact. It's what it says. I'd read the Bible all my life, and I come to facts. I knew what it said, and I believed it with all my heart. When somebody told me Jesus' blood will cleanse you, I had to find it for myself. I found, I believed it with all my heart. When it said it takes faith to please God, I had to find that, and I said, you know what? I got to live by faith. I can't just preach. I got to live by it. Faith without works is dead. You get nowhere without having some works to it. So when you can say, I believe in Jesus, but do you do what he said? And what did Deuteronomy 18? We read it every Shabbat morning. What does it say in Deuteronomy 18? We read it, and it tells us, he says, I'm going to put my words in his mouth. And once he puts his, what words is he telling us about? What words is he telling that he's going to put in his mouth? He's going to put the Torah in him. And then I'm going to let him come and shine. I'm going to let him shine bright for all the world to see. And he's going to teach people. If we just take that, and then we went on understanding all the words of Jesus. I never forget sitting with a few guys that I care about. I love these guys. They minister in their own churches and stuff. And I asked a question sitting at a table, white table, just like that. I said, have you ever preached every word Jesus ever spoke? gets, you know, kind of, it's like a trick question sometimes. Well, I'm not sure. I preached most of it. I'm sure, pretty sure I preached most of it. No, I said, take it as a theme and look at it and go down every part of it and look at everything he ever preached about. Shouldn't we know that stuff? If we're the one we're following, he's our rabbi. We should know everything he ever said. We should know why he said what he said. But in order to understand Jesus without Torah background, you're crippled. It's like your brain won't even work. And so what happens when you don't understand what he's saying, you interpret it by self. You self-interpret it, and then all of a sudden you got something you don't know what to do with later on because it sure don't fit the timeline of the scripture. So I'm helping you. Let's start this Torah portion for. We run out of time here. This week's Torah portion is called Re'eh, which means to see or look, and the primitive root word for see is the Hebrew word raha, which is strong 7200, which means to see, look, observe, pay close attention, consider. And that's what he wants us to see the Torah, see it. So who we're looking at? Let me tell you, there's nothing. If it's in writing, it gets a little tough. You look at it in writing, and you look at it, and the lines start crossing sometime on you. It's just so much, right? And what we have is people, they get weary in it. Just like the Israelites at Mount Sinai. He starts to speak and they go, wait, oh, stop. And that's what people are getting to. They're getting tired and weary in it. They want him to stop. And you'll end up just like them. I don't want him to stop. I want him to keep opening up. Because the more you open your mind to it, the more it consumes you. It consumes your passion. I need to have less of a passion for other things. There's no doubt. I know that for a fact in my life. And I need to have more passion for him. And when I have the passion for him, then he can take that passion. And when he controls the passions I have for anything else will be within the parameters of the Torah. That's what will happen. And it's just something about it that's a wonderful thing. But he says, what is he telling us when he says, Re'eh? See, pay close attention to it. Not just see, but pay close attention to it. So let me give you an example. So you buy a nice ring. So you buy a ring, and sometimes a ring costs a lot, and take you got to save for a long time to buy a ring. So I bought Charlotte a ring. I saved a long time to buy this ring. Now it's valuable. It's not only valuable in money, but it's valuable in the fact that it means something to us. It's our covenant together. But we don't take it and put it in a safe. That's not guarding it. So we think we can take the Torah and put it somewhere, you know, make it real nice and put it up here and it's just nice. That's not paying attention to it. See, we try to do things that show something to somebody that we're really passionate about, but we have no passion for it. But who can guard it better than when it's on you? You're wearing it. You wear it with pride, you wear it with respect, and you wear it and you guard it. It's close to you. You know you got it at all times. In the safe, even though it's locked away, you don't know if somebody broke in and took it. That's not what you do when he says pay attention. Give attention to it. And if you give attention to it, it'll bring life-changing things to your entire, your whole being. This is a command that we all would do well to heed today. All of us would do well to heed today. And that is to observe and pay close attention to that which lies ahead of us as we await the return of our King, so that we are able to discern and act wisely as we follow the Torah instructions of Elohim. And so there's this situation that they're in. They're brought to this, to the valley of Shechem. And they're looking at Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. They're looking at it. And they got to make some decisions. In the ancient pictograph script, this word also reveals a great truth to us. Ezra, Strong's 87200 is pitched as follows. We have the resh, the olive, and the hay. In the resh, an ancient pictograph script has this letter pictured as the head of a man and carries the meaning of top, beginning, first, chief. And as in being the top of the body or the head of a tribe and the one who rules, and also speaks of possession or inheritance that is decided by a chief. Now, I know these things might seem repetitive, but we don't know them real good. So we're going to go over them. And I have a decision to make when we're putting this together. We can decide to leave these out and just go to the next subject. But every time I attempt to do that, I get arrested by the Spirit of God. He says, why would you do that? You don't know it well. And let me tell you how you learn something. What does the teacher do when she wants her students to learn something? She repeats it over and over and over again. And that's what God is trying to do in our lives. He's trying to be repetitive so we'll learn these things. How many thank God you get a chance to go over these over and over? So don't get weary in it. Don't say, stop, God, that's enough. Don't say no more. Whatever you said, we're going to do. You need to let him speak it. It's the vibration when God's word comes forth that speaks it. It puts a fire inside of you. You feel so wonderful that God has spoken to you. And it's a wonderful thing. I can tell you, leading up to today, I thought I was going to take off. It's been a couple of weeks there. And I hope you can tell a little bit. The olive, the ancient pictograph script, has this letter pictured as olive. The head of an ox represents strength, meaning muscle, as the ox is the strongest of the livestock animal. This also carries the meaning of yoke, as an ox is placed in a yoke in order to plow or pull a heavy load in the right direction. This can also picture for us the red heifer sacrifice that Yeshua Messiah fulfilled. What a wonderful thing to know, all this information. The hay, in ancient script, has the letter pictured as hay, which is a man standing with his arms raised out. The meaning of the letter is behold, look, breathe, sigh, and reveal a revelation. From the idea of revealing a great sight by pointing it out. He points it out to us. It also carries for us the meaning of surrender. As we lift up our hands and submit to Jehovah, as we lift our hands in praise, declaring his authority under which we humbly submit. To see and be functional in seeing, we should, can render the following meaning for us. The beginning of our strength is in the revelation of Messiah, our head, who we praise and serve with our all. Think about that. So who we're looking at? Now, they didn't have the living Torah. That's why this is the renewed covenant. Now, they didn't have anything less. They had Jehovah himself, but they didn't want to hear him. They wanted a mediator. Said Moses, let Moses do it. So they backed away in their decision. They backing away. Instead of going closer, which he's drawing them, they're doing this. Can you imagine? He sent the jewel down to put on their finger. This is how I thought about it today. I was just thinking about this ring here. He sent the jewel, sapphire, with the 10 words. And what did they do? They built a golden calf. Can you imagine that? God said, you better get down there. Because I'll kill them all. What are they doing? Here I am. Can you imagine? The groom shows up, tucks everything ready to go. The wedding, everybody's sitting at the wedding. The candles are lit and they're singing a song. And all of a sudden the pianist strikes in. Here comes the bride. And no bride comes. Groom's standing up there and he's ready. I mean, he spent all this time and effort. No bride. That would be devastating for the groom, wouldn't it? How devastating was it for Jehovah when he gave this jewel of sapphire stone with 10 words on it, and he shared his character with them? This is my character. This is how I act. This is how I speak. This is what I'm involved in. This is what I love. This is what I don't like. And instead, they built a golden calf. And they worshiped it as Jehovah. Think about it. They worshiped it as the God that Moses was speaking to. And did he accept it? Just because you call it Christian, don't make it Christian. Just because you call whatever festival you're celebrating, well, this is for the Lord, don't make it for the Lord. You can say whatever you want, but we don't get a say in this. We're supposed to humble ourselves before the cross, bow our knee, and accept the blood that covers us in our sin, because we all transgressed the covenant. And we ought to be thankful that we get a shot at this, another shot. Amen? The beginning of our strength is in the revelation of Messiah ahead. How many think we ought to get a better revelation of Messiah? And there's nothing that you read in the Bible that can give you a better revelation than Messiah than the Torah. Remember in our half Torah what it said? He said, I gave my back to the ones who struck me. I turned the cheek to the ones who plucked my beard. Let me tell you, that prophecy, it done something for me this week. And I don't normally get into it that heavy, but when I got to talk, I dive in. I want to get in it. I want to know the ins and outs about it. I want to know what I'm missing here. So we have this revelation of Messiah, our head, who we praise and serve with our all. And what does he tell the woman at the well? She said, well, we worship on this mountain. So remember what they did. They accepted that was the mountain. The Samaritan said, this is the mountain, because they believed that they had Gerizim. But he said, you say Jerusalem. He said, woman, I tell you, the time coming and now is that the true worshiper is not going to worship on this mountain nor in Jerusalem, but they'll worship the Father in spirit and truth. Remember that, in spirit and truth. Now, we don't mind getting the spirit right, because we got involved in the spirit. We don't mind that, but we don't want the truth. Folk going around saying, well, the spirit's going to lead me in the truth. Spirit teaches all things. He ain't teaching me that. And so what he sent like 12 different people to you already. But you won't hear nothing they say. You're just still stuck in that, you're about knee deep in traditions. Won't let go of what you had in the past. In Hebrew, the word for Ra, Strong 7467, also carries the meaning of shepherd, as well as to pasture, graze, consume, feed. And this clearly points to Yeshua, our good shepherd, our strong head, that was lifted up and exalted on high, as in Tehillah, Psalms 80, verse 1, where we see the term Roe Israel, which means shepherd of Israel. Shepherd of Israel. Or in Tehillah, Psalms 23, where we see the phrase Yehovah Roe, which means Yehovah is my shepherd. In Hebrew, the word that is translated as evil comes from the root word ra. Brother Scott pointed this out. I think you shared it with everybody. So everybody knows that. He pointed that out because we have to stay away from the evil inclination. And that's what was being discussed at the time. And that, like you say to your children, ra. It's Strong 7451, which means bad, evil, wicked, and harmful. We don't want bad, evil, wicked, and harmful things in our house, right? So we stay away from that. Which comes from the primitive root verb, re'e, or ra'e, Strong 7489, which means to be evil, bad, act wickedly, practice evil, work calamity, do harm, be displeasing. See how close you could be? That's why he says, you're in the valley of decision. You got Gerizim here and you got Ebal here. It's not a lot of space between being blessed and being cursed. Not a lot of space at all. What is very interesting and worth taking note of is that the root verb rae, Strong 7489, for evil and wickedness, has the same phonetic sound as the root verb ra'a, Strong 7462, for see, shepherd. And when we see him, what's the indication that what we have in mind when we're looking at him? Pay close attention. Pay close attention. Now, if I'm up here and I'm teaching, I say pay close attention. What I'm going to say next is going to be important. So I'm setting it up. I'm setting up by using that term. And that's what the title of this tour portion, he's saying, listen, when I ask, I tell you to see or look, I'm telling you to pay close attention because the next thing you're going to hear is going to be very important for you. The difference between ra'ah, evil, wickedness, and shepherd, and ra'ah, see, observe, pay attention, is the middle letter with the root word for evil containing the letter ayin, and the root word for see contains the letter aleph. You think letters matter in Hebrew? You better believe they do. So it's not just phonetics that matter. The letter matters. So when you see it spelled out and you see the one with the ayin, that's the one we do what? We stay away from that. That's Mount Ebal. But you see the one with the olive spelled the same exact way except for the middle letter is olive. We know when we see the olive who's in charge of that one. We automatically know who's in charge of that one. Amen? And that means to see or pay attention to this. Don't pay attention to the other one because you're going to get led astray. This should be a clear wake-up call for us to see how things may sound correct and even at times may be written with the same letters yet may cause us to look at what is wrong. Many of our fathers, teachers, teachings, and ways may sound good and true, yet when tested against the measuring stick of the Torah, we find that most of what we inherit was in fact not good at all, and what we must learn is that corrupt practices spoil our relationship with Jehovah. It spoils it. The Torah tells us that it spoils it. And so it's the struggles there. So what led me on this journey was the struggle that was there. I could feel it. Because in my heart, I was wanting to be honest before God with everything in me. That was my passion. I've seen people go, and the journey we took was quite a journey. The story of the birth of this ministry was quite a story. And I'd come to a place where, Lord, there's got to be something we're missing. Because as far as I can see, I'm doing everything I know to do. And I'm preaching my heart out. I'm preaching with every fiber of my being. And we had your spirit move through, and the spirit it wasn't getting done. We had people laid everywhere. Wasn't getting done. Where was the passion? After you got up the floor, where's the passion? We can get you excited. You can cry all service and go home and say, man, it was the best service we ever had in our life. And I'm thinking about all these times I'm looking at, and I'm having these, I'm like, Lord, what is missing? Where are we missing it? That was my prayer. We're missing something. And then we wind up right here. So let's read a verse of the Torah at least. Verse 26 through 28. Moses is telling us very clear here that we ought to pay close attention to and consider carefully that which he is setting before us. And that which he is setting before us is a blessing and a curse. Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 26. See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. How many see that? The blessing, when you obey the commands of Jehovah, your Elohim, which I command you today. What's the condition of the blessing? when you obey the commands of Jehovah. This is not tricks here. He's not trying to trick us. He tells us in plain English so we can understand it. I put before you blessings and curse. Now, listen, it's out there. Just imagine it like this. The blessing's there and the curse is there. It's there. It's just there. It's been sent forth. When I obey, what naturally comes alongside of me? Blessings, naturally. When I disobey, what naturally comes? See, God doesn't arbitrarily put a curse on you. He's not a witch. He don't practice divination. He's just telling you because he's God and he knows what's out there. When you disobey, naturally, what's going to cling to you? The curse is going to come because he's not putting a curse on you. And he's bringing all the bad against you because once that happens, the people say, I don't know what I've done wrong, but God's sure after me. I've heard people say that. What do you mean God's after you? God's not after you. And that's when we got to speak up right in there. God's not after you. Somehow we're in disobedience and the curse comes. And so we got to walk in the blessing. When we walk in the blessing, it's going to be direct result because of our obedience to God. And the curse, if you do not obey the commands of Jehovah your Elohim. So what's the condition of the curse? Not obeying. But turn aside from the way which I commanded you today to go after other mighty ones which you have not known. Man innately desires a God. When we're born, we're always looking to a superior authority. And Satan is trying to convince us that he's it. And God is trying to convince us that he's it. And he gave us his word to tell us the truth. And the people who want to believe his word, they'll realize that innately, deep inside of us from our birth, we want to have a God that we can pay homage to. So we either pay an homage to God or homage to Satan, one of them. And because we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God, we know what it means to pay homage to Satan. We all know what that means. My hope is that we can experience what it really, truly means. I'll tell you, this week was a week for me to think and just really think about it. I was thinking about Yeshua. And I was thinking about his life. I was thinking about how Yeshua could go to a wedding and they got a problem that didn't concern him. That don't concern me. But at his word, because he walked so close with the master, God honored what he said. Had nothing to do with, what does God have to do with that? God has nothing to do with that. But he honored it because of his word. Because the position that Yeshua held, and he was so close, he was living the Torah, and it pleased God so much that something that didn't even concern God, he blessed it. But the blessings followed him. Fill it with water. It'll taste like wine. Just what's going to happen. There was no debate. There was no pleading, yanking on the curtains and said, oh God, oh God. He didn't do that. He just said, do what I tell you. And he did it. And it was done. Because the blessings followed. The man that could be fast asleep in the boat, and the boat sinking, could be woke up. And they're crying out, do you care about us? Do you care that we're going to perish? And he'll say, where's your faith at? Peace, be still. Seas calm. Again, there was no, God, do you want to do this? Whatever he said, God honored it because of he obeyed. He didn't get a miracle until he was obedient. The miracle came because he was obedient. Wherever he stepped, he was being obedient. He didn't go a place. He didn't go like, I'm going to go take a walk today. He didn't go take walks. He only went where God told him to go. When he came and he's walking on the water, and his disciples saw him and thought it was a ghost. I'm thinking about what was his mind when he's on the shore. And he looks at the water and he says, I know I got to get out there because the Lord told me I got to go teach a lesson to them. How am I going to get to them? They out there, I'm over here. I just go. And he just stepped out. What kind of faith that is? And the water's holding him because blessings. He didn't get that because somehow it's just because he's God. See, we want to associate he gets this because he's God, but he gets it because the blessings are following him because he's obeying the Torah. He's living it out. When he stepped forward, God couldn't let anything happen to him, so it's going to hold him. And then he tells Peter, he said, you want to experience this? Come out of the boat. But what happened? You can't give your eyes on the cares of the world and have your eyes on the Torah. You can't look at Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal at the same time and think, well, I'm just gonna keep both of them. It don't work like that. You got to decide. You got to go up one side or the other. And you're going to do that. You can't just stay in the valley. I'm just going to stay here. What did Elijah say to him? How long are you going to hold between two opinions? If it's Jehovah, then let's serve him. If it's Baal, then serve him. Do what you're going to do. But we can't be debating over two things here. We got to make a decision. So let's cover these couple verses here. The Hebrew word that is used here for blessing is barak. Strong's H1293, which means a blessing, benefit, gift, peace. It comes from the root word barak. Strong's H1288, which means to kneel, bless, abundantly bless. And literally carries the meaning to kneel or bow down, to show respect, to bring a gift to another while kneeling out of respect. So, very good to understand that when the blessings are on you, that's no time to be slack in your Torah understanding. What you want to do is you want to focus even more. That's why he says, see, pay close attention. So in ancient script, we have the Hebrew word for bless is barak, which is Strong's 1288, pictured as the bet, the race. In the cough, the bet in ancient script has this letter as a house which pictures the tent floor plan and means house or tent. It represents family and the importance of those who are inside the tent as opposed to the tent structure itself. The race, in ancient pictograph scripts, has this letter as the head of a man, carries the meaning of top, beginning, first, chief, as in the beginning of the top of the body, or the head of a tribe and one who rules, and also speaks of possession or inheritance that is decided by the chief. Nikaf, an ancient pictograph script, has this letter pictured as the open palm of a hand and carries a symbol that to which submission is given under the hand. Once again, we're able to clearly see who it is who blesses us. The house or assembly of Elohim is blessed as the head or chief comes down and extends his open and revealed hand to his own. Now, how did he come down? We're speaking of Jehovah. How did he come down? He came down, or he sent his agent, which was Yeshua. And the agent, who represented the Father so well, he said, when you see me, you've seen the Father. That's how well he represented him. He was so locked in the Torah, he understood that. That's why the blessings follow him. That's why when Yeshua put his hand on a dead person, that person was not dead no more. Think about that. That's why he said they're sleeping. I'm going to wake them up. Wake up. That's why when he said, Lazarus, come forth, there was no choice in that. It had to happen because he operated at that level. And how many want the blessings to follow you? When we say something, it happens. Think about that. The Hebrew word that is translated here as curse is kalah, Strong 7045, which comes from the root verb kalah, Strong 7043, which means to be light, swift, trifling, cursed, despised. And the primary emphasis that is being given here is the absence or reversal of a blessing, a rightful state, and a lowering to a lesser state. So you're going to live your life at the state that God has prescribed for your life? He's here to bless us. He don't want to curse. So we're going to live at that state in our life or a lesser state. It's whatever state you want to live in. However you want your life to go. Sometimes people just say, I'm tired of it. Well, you're living at a lesser state, and so it's going to wear us out. We're going to be walking plumb out. Or we can live at a state that we're not in that condition, because we're allowing the Torah to do the job that it does in us that brings us to that spot where the blessings are there. They follow us. What is being set before us is either the abundant blessing and shalom of Jehovah, or the absence or reversal thereof. The two are set before us and are conditional to our response to the clear instructions, whether we obey or not. The Hebrew word that is translated as obey comes from the primitive root word shema. Strong's 8085, which carries the meaning not just simply to hear, but rather to listen with attention. You see how they link together? The Shema is linked with the title of this Re'eh. It's linked together. Pay attention. Comprehend and discern. Give heed to what is being spoken. How many giving heed to what's being spoken tonight? This is the freshest thing being spoken to you right now. It's the freshest thing you've heard. And you might have been studying the Torah all week, but what's being spoken right now, he says, pay attention to it. And what amazes me is that people are not paying attention to what's being said. And if you're not paying attention, are you under the blessing or the curse? Is it important for us to pay attention? You better believe it is. Don't get like the children of Israel got at Mount Sinai when they said, don't speak no more. We're dumb. We need to tell Moses, tell him. They weren't ready to listen. They weren't ready to, if you're not listening, you're not doing what? Paying attention. What does the teacher do when the class erupts? They might hit the desk. Everybody, pay attention. Pay attention. So at the end of class, you got 5 minutes, the bell's going to ring, class is over. Teacher says, pay attention. I'm about to tell you what's going to happen the next class. You're going to have a quiz. And this is the lesson you need to study. You need to study 7 and 8. And you still sidetracked. You get home, you don't know what she said. You have no idea what she said. Are you going to be prepared for the quiz? No, you're going to be ill-prepared. Well, listen, let me tell you what God is doing. He said, listen, pay attention. Time's almost up. I'm about to return. I'm coming back. This is what you need to do. Those who are not listening are going to be ill-prepared when he returns, and it's going to be a sad, sad, sad day for a lot of people. I want to pay attention. And the way we do that, we allow the Torah to come inside of us. So people say, well, I receive Yeshua. If you receive Yeshua, you want to read the Torah. You want to keep what he kept. You want to do what he did, period. The moment you bring man's ideas in, the moment you tell on yourself, you just told on yourself, you lied about receiving Yeshua. You got a likeness of receiving him, but you hadn't received him because you're still doing the things you were doing before he came in. I mean, see that he brings change. Absolutely brings change. Understand I need to be a people who are listening attentively and giving heed to his word in a time when most are not. Let us recognize that this now is certainly the time for us to be hearing and discerning and obeying people. We ought to be hearing, discerning, obeying people. We have before us the clear blessings when we obey and the curse when we do not obey. It is Jehovah's ways or not. This is the problem when we come, we start serving the Lord. We want to serve him, but we want to bring our ways in. And our ways are not going to get it done. We want to bring in our religion, our title. We want to bring that in. It doesn't get it done. It's either Jehovah's ways or not. We cannot pick and choose what we want to obey and pay attention to. And what we do not want to do, we conveniently ignore. That's what people do. They conveniently ignore. Well, we just don't, you know, we don't think you have to do that. That's a little extreme, it seems to me. It appears to me that's a little extreme. In that article I was reading, in that little side devotional, it talks about the Torah. The title of it is The Torah After the Cross. You're not going to see many messages on that because it's after the cross. Instead of preachers preaching about unhitching, you ought to hitch up. Not only hitch up, but lock the tongue down and never let it go. It's permanent. You're not going to unhitch again. That's what needs to happen. But instead we have well-known preachers talking about we ought to unhitch from the Old Testament. And they quote in Scripture like the letter killeth, but the Spirit gives life. What letter kills? The letter kills because we broke the covenant. That's the only way we can be under the curse. We broke the covenant. Does it kill if we didn't break the covenant? It don't kill. The Spirit is what renewed the covenant. It's the seal of the renewal. It's the guarantee. It's the earnestness of the Spirit. He talks about, Paul talks, the earnestness of the Spirit. It's the down payment was paid for us. And now we got a chance to do it again. Let's not do the same thing was done the first time. We still have to obey. That's why Jacob and James, he says, listen, we're going around talking about faith, faith, faith. He said, but let me tell you something. If you're not doing anything, what is your good is your faith? What good is it when a person don't have anything and you say, well, maybe tomorrow somebody will come along. He said, no, you do something right now. You don't put it off. We're talking about faith. You reach out and you help now. Put some works to your faith. And that's what the Torah teaches. It teaches not only we don't only believe in Yeshua, but we do what he said to do. Too many today simply want to give their ear to the many wonderful blessings that are contained in Scripture, yet they are unwilling to pay careful attention and give heed to the instructions that are clearly set before us, instructions that we are required and commanded to walk in for us to have the experience and blessings of the true obedience. You know, people want inspiration. I come to that conclusion after observing people and watching people come and go. They want you to inspire them. They want to sit in the church and they want to go home with their cheek trembling a little bit. That's what it's all about. I got to feel something. But the moment you start talking about how they can keep the feeling, even when the song stops, even when the preacher's not around, you can keep the feeling when you're at your house. You got to obey. It'll be with you for the rest of your life. It'll never go away. That's a little much. We don't want to be... Sounds like you're fussing at us all the time. People don't want to be fussed at. They go to church, they want to be inspired. Well, it's hard for you to preach inspirational things, just constantly inspiring. And you get the same results. You just inspire them for a momentary time, and it all just comes back. What is going on? He's trying to change that for us so we're not just going through inspiration, but we get revelation. I think the two can help each other. Obedience results in blessing, and disobedience brings forth the curse, or rather the lack of or reversal of the blessing. In Tehillah, Psalms 119, verse 105, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. The word and the commands of Jehovah lights our path and is the way in which we are to follow him. It's the ways we're to follow him. In Proverbs 6:23, for the command is a lamp, and the Torah a light, and the reproofs of discipline a way of life. That's what it is. And that's what going to church should feel like. If we need reproof, we ought to welcome it. If somebody tells you something about you're going down the wrong path, you climb an E-ball. If somebody comes up to you and tells you you're climbing E-ball, you're going to instantly know what that means. It's a nice way to say it without really saying it. But if you study in Torah, you're going to say, you're going to go, okay, I just got rebuked. And nobody knows what. So I know some of you are going to be using that from now on. You're going to say, get off of Ebal. Get on Gerizim. If we turn from his commands and do not obey them and turn aside from the path in which we are commanded to walk in and walk in other paths that we are not have not known, then we will find ourselves having turned away from the blessing and as a result have the curse before us, which is simply the absence of the blessing. I'm going to stop right there. So my prayer is that We got a little ways in it anyway. My prayer is that we get a hold to this and we get passionate about it. And that if you'll take the first few slides of this Torah portion that I talked about and take it to heart, you'll realize that when he puts the Torah in your mind, the Torah is going to capture your thoughts. If he puts the Torah in your heart, the Torah is going to capture your passions. It constantly desires that. And you're going to have more of a desire for the things he likes. It's just natural. It's a natural effect that comes. It's the cause and effect that's an operation. The blessings naturally follow us. And what happens if there's an absence of blessing? What happens when there's nothing done? He said, when there's nothing done, the evil one comes back and sees nothing being done. He brings seven other spirits worse. And what happens? He's telling us. This is Yeshua telling us these wonderful things. He's warning us that we got to be careful. And that's what we see happen. So I want naturally the blessings to follow me. When you have you're absent the blessing, the next things happen is the curse. There's nothing in between. So I didn't go very far. But it's good. So God bless you. I appreciate you for coming. Thank God for you. We'll see you.